You're listening to Wet Shaving Talk, powered by Sharpologist.com, where we're dedicated to preserving the art and skill of classic shaving. I'm your host, Joe Borelli, and today is April 30th, 2018. Hey guys, welcome back to the podcast on this beautiful spring day. I've noticed that the weather is getting better out there up north. It's getting, it's getting a little hotter down here, but you know what? We'll get through it. It's not that bad. It's been pretty mild spring, I can tell you, for us down in Florida, and I'm sure around the rest of the world. It's been getting better. I've been noticing that. No more snow, hopefully. Keep our fingers crossed. Anyway, with the podcast this week, we've got a little bit of a similar format, but we're going to talk about some different stuff. First off, we're going to talk about a razor that started it all, really. We'll talk about that. The Gillette Double Ring, which is a razor that really started the whole double-edge razor design craze and all that for almost 80 years, really. It was popular for about 80 years. It was produced for 80 years. And, well, it was mainstream for at least 60 or 70 of those 80 years. So we'll talk about the Gillette Double Ring. A formal review is coming up soon on Sharpologist as well for that. Wet shaving raffles, are they worth it? What's the deal with them, right? I'm going to talk a little bit more about wet shaving raffles and what I've been seeing and stuff like that in the actual uncertain groups out there. Training tip of the week is to face lather or bowl lather. Are there advantages to either or is it just preference? I'll tell you my thoughts. And our review of the week is Katie's Bubbles Tonsorial Polar. Tonsorial Polar. We'll talk about that as well. And is this a scent that brings you to the past or to the future? Talk about that as well. So guys, without further ado, let's get on with the show. Okay guys, so we have the Gillette Double Ring. I just recently started researching it. And it's been a long journey, I could tell you, from trying to find out some stuff. I do have a couple of books on Gillette, but really with Gillette, they didn't do too much with the in the records department up until about 1907. So anything prior to that, 1907, 1909 area, anything prior to that, well, you're kind of looking at production numbers and estimates. Not much going out there, but I was able to get a hold of somebody from Gillette and found out some information about them. A really awesome design, and I went ahead and did a video of me shaving with one of mine. Now, it took me about 2 or 3 years to actually pick one of these up, and luckily now I actually have two Gillette Double Rings that I was able to get. I have a 1903 to 1904 model without a patent number, and I have a newer one, a 1905, towards the end of 1905 production, serial numbered one. And I could tell you something about these razors. One, if you see on, I left the show notes, I left the link to the actual video itself. They shave nicely. They're a little bit more aggressive than a standard Gillette, but not more aggressive than like a newer, more aggressive, Wolfman razor or another more aggressive like, I could say like the Blackbird's probably more aggressive than it as well. Really, I could tell you that the razor shaved really well. I'm going to be really quite honest. I was very impressed because you think of like, okay, the first razor that came out, the first of anything, really. Usually there's bugs or something like that with it, right? Doesn't work out well or wouldn't be as good as in modern ones. I could tell you that this razor, this little 50-gram razor, will stand up to the test of time. Well, it has stood up to the test of time. It's still here, right? It's over 115 years old. But we'll compete for, we'll be up there with best shave. Definitely. As you can see in the video, it's just really mild, more aggressive than a standard regular Gillette three-piece razor, right? Newer one. So it's a little bit more aggressive than that, but on the aggression scale, I thought it was medium. I didn't think it was bad at all. I thought it was clean. I thought it was really nice and it was balanced. I thought that the actual knurling and the handle was really, really well done. I mean, I think that when I was using this razor, and these are just thoughts, guys, and this is just what I think. If you have one too, you might know what I'm talking about. It's just the engineering on it was, there's so much work put into this razor to make that happen that it really does shave well. And I can understand why people were paying $5 for this razor back in 1904 which was a lot of money back then, about probably roughly about $190 today. But I can understand why. I mean, it was a big difference going from it. And then if you think about it, like I actually did a test. I went from a straight razor to that for a couple days. And I was like, wow, you know what? It's just like this razor is so much easier to use compared to the straight razor that it was like I can understand why everybody did. I wanted to get the whole experience. I wanted to see what a person in 1903 would make them buy something when you could buy a straight razor for 50 cents and a strop for maybe 80 cents or something like that, right? For under a dollar, why would I pay five times more for something? And I understood after I did it. The convenience, the quick speed, the shave was nice, everything. It's awesome. So guys, I want you to check out that video if you get a chance. There's a couple of little secrets in there in that video that I'll show you on how to use it and how to work with it. It's a lot of fun. So moving right along, this is the main discussion of the week, and I wanted to spend some time on it. That's why I kind of rushed through the first one. The wet shaving raffles, are they worth it? And what do I mean by worth it? If you've done a wet shaving raffle, have you realized? Do you really think about the odds, or do we just jump into getting into it? Okay, so let's just think about that for a second. The odds of winning, right? So, how much does this item actually cost? We're going to talk about that. Let's see. So, I've recently seen some raffles, and you see them, they go real high, right? Real high price, maybe 100 spots, 200 spots. And I see guys buying one or two spots. You know, and there's times when the guy or gal that buys one ticket will win, right? But the odds and probability of that could be, you know, in the thousands or hundreds to one, right? So, I mean, what another thing I want to talk about is like, all right, the odds, are they worth it? Is it worth spending 12, 15 bucks, 20 bucks? You know, to a lot of people, gambling is fun. I think gambling is fun too, but you got to remember, 90% of the time the house wins, you know, you're not going to win. So remember that kind of probability. So first thing, I want to talk about what things to look at when you actually do a raffle or participate in a raffle. How much does that item cost new? All right, so look at the item. If the item is like a $500 item and it's going for $2,000 on that raffle, you know, look at it that way. Think of it this way, that if you buy the majority of the spots to win, right, so you have a good probability of winning, you're going to spend more than this razor's worth. But then that brings us to our next thing. Is a razor unobtainable? Can you find it? Can you not find it? Is it worth it? How much is it worth to you? How are the raffles performed? So do they do like an online, you know, random.org or something like that, or are they using like tickets in a hat? Who knows, right? But one thing you want to look at is really know the chances that you are going to lose, and the chances that you're losing are high unless you buy like most of the spots. So think of it this way: if you really want something, you're to get a probability of winning that's going to actually favor you, you're probably going to have to buy 50% or more of the spots. So here's my recommendations. Understanding the odds, if there's 50 or 60 spots available and you buy two spots, what's the probability you're going to win, right? It's just not feasible. It's not good. There's a 98% chance you're going to lose. But if you bought 30 spots, you got a 50% chance of winning. If you bought 75% of the spots, you have a 75% chance of winning. So, I mean, if you think of it that way, that's the only way I would play in the raffles, is because I would be like, okay, well, I understand, you know, I want to take a chance, but I also know I'm going to lose no matter what, right? Another thing is, really know your limit, because keep buying spots, it's just going to cause disappointment, and you might drop 100, 200 bucks on something that might only cost $400 brand new, and you lose, and now you're going to be like, I mean, recently there was a guy that bought all the spots in a raffle, lost one spot, lost to one spot, he lost like $1,000 or something like that out of his pocket. You know, that's something that when you look for the sure bet, that's pretty tough to take. But there's another thing I want to talk about. Recently, I noticed a trend with several groups dedicated, you know, just dedicated raffles, and found that there were some very lucky people in these groups. There's one guy that won six or seven raffles in a 2-week period, or a 3-week period, or a 1-month period. And after I did some research, I just said, you know, let me look at the odds. The probability of this guy winning that many times is in the billions. It's in the billions of winning. So what is it? What's going on with these raffles? So a couple things I want you guys to look at with the raffles. Understand that you're going to probably lose. Two, really know the platform that you're dealing with. Is there some shady stuff going on with these raffle pages? You know, how is there anybody? Is there regulation? There's really no way of regulating. And that's why you see a lot of this stuff on Facebook. I'll be honest with you. You see a lot of it on Facebook. You don't see it on the forums. Because on the forums, for some reason, the guys on Facebook or people on Facebook don't like forums. And forums don't like Facebook. And I could see why. Because on Facebook, it's like the Wild West. You can do whatever you want. You know, there's nobody regulating you. There's nobody telling you not to, except for the group owner, right? The forums with thousands of members, you know, 50, 60,000 members on like Badger and Blade and Straight Razor Place, right? You go on there and you'll see like thousands of members and you see guys and you see hundreds of moderators and they go by the rules. You know, they won't do a raffle on there because they know there's no way of regulating and making sure it's safe. So just think, keep things in mind. If you see a lot of very lucky people on raffle pages, you know what? It is possible. I could be wrong, right? It could be possible. But wow, if somebody's winning that many raffles, they need to go to Vegas, okay? Because they are the luckiest people alive if they can win 5 or 6 raffles and only buy like, you know, 5% of the spots. I mean, you're looking at something that's really, really lucky, right? Someone that's really lucky. So I know we're just kind of going on and on about this, but this is something that's been bothering me lately because I've been watching a lot of raffles come up and a lot of the same people winning lately. And you want to know something? It's I don't participate really in the raffles. I'm going to be honest with you because I'd rather, you know, as much as I love to get some hard to find stuff, I know that there's a good chance I'm not going to. And unless I like the sure bet myself, so if I'm going to go all in, I'm going to go all in and buy something to win. You know, I'm not going to go in and just, okay, I'll buy 3 spots, hopefully I'll win, you know, because there's a good chance that I'm not, better chance that I'm not than I will. So I just wanted to, you know, voice my thoughts on this, on the actual raffle process and everything. And just, guys, be careful with these things because there's a lot of people that can make their own groups up, do whatever they want. Okay, and the last thing you want to do is find out that, you know, the raffles are being rerung or something like that for someone to win, you know, for somebody's friends to win or somebody's paying somebody off or something like that. You know, it's just stuff like that. I mean, is it happening? I don't know. I don't think so. But if it is, wow, that's really bad. That's really bad. And that's why, you know, I kind of have been staying away from the raffle pages because it's just, there's several of them out there. It's not just one. It's not just one page. There's several out there that do, you know, that just seem a little bit, you know, hey, who's checking up on the guy doing this and who's checking up on the guy doing that? How do we know that these raffles aren't being rung 3 or 4 times just to see if there's a favorable outlook? You don't know. That's the thing. You don't know. So keep these, you know, just some thoughts for mind. Just think about it, you know, before you go all in on a raffle. Last thing I want to do is see somebody, you know, a good wet shaver, a new guy, or even an experienced person lose all their money on trying to take a chance and actually because and just to find out that it wasn't working in their favor, if you know what I mean. All right, guys, so let's move up to the training tip of the week. And is it to face lather or bowl lather? Are there advantages to either or is it just preference? Well, I kind of went and did this week just to see if this would work. I face lathered for 2 days and I bowl lathered for 2 days. And then I did, well, I kind of messed around and did half and half. And what I noticed with the face lathering is I personally prefer face lathering better. I feel that the soap is, I don't know if it's like thicker or just like not broken down as much. I just feel like I can get a better lather straight from the puck. But then again, I get more of a fluffier, like nicer lather from a bowl. So I'll be honest with you guys, I'm kind of thrown up in the air over it. I really don't know which one to say is better. I tried to prove one of them wrong really hard this week, and I like both ways. It's just what I'm in the mood for. Now, if you have a bowl, a nice shaving bowl or a scuttle or something like that, it makes it really nice. I mean, it makes it fun. It's another like little accessory to have. The lather, to me, tends to have a little bit more air in it when you do it that way. And a little fluffier, a little softer than if you just lather it from the puck. But the puck is thicker, and that's the way I like it with certain razors, I guess. Maybe more of an aggressive razor. I like to have a really thick lather with not too much water in it. But I don't mind that either. So it's kind of weird. I mean, this really threw me for a screwball, to be honest, because I was like, whoa, I'm trying to figure out a way on how to prove one of them wrong all week, and I can't do it. So are there advantages or disadvantages, or is it just preference? I'm going to go with just preference. But I know that there are some people out there that are going to disagree with me and say, yeah, I like face either. And that's what makes the world go round, makes it awesome that this hobby is so fun, because we can disagree. So when you face either, one thing I will recommend is add a little water as you go and just see how thick you can get it, because sometimes you'll just be like rubbing it in the bowl and it'll just, you won't get a big lather out of it because it's not wet enough, the brush. So I just drop, I'll just hit the sink with a few drops and just keep going until I get what I want and load the brush up again. When you do it with a puck, straight up face lathering, you just add a little water onto the brush. You can do that, or you can bloom the soap. Either or works very well. But you don't need to go and worry about, the lather will come out basically on the brush. You don't have to put anywhere else. And it will be a little bit thicker, in my opinion. At least that's what happened to me all week. Now, bowl lathering to me is a little bit more fun because you get a nice, cool, maybe buy a nice custom ceramic bowl. Or if you know somebody that makes bowls, have them make one for you. It's a little bit more of a custom feel. Another thing to put in a shaved end. So it's really cool. I recommend trying both. I mean, when I go on vacation or something, I don't bowl lather at all. I'll face lather the whole time because, it's just who wants to bring a bowl with them? The chances of losing it, breaking it, whatever. So I don't do that. But when I'm also, when I'm just kind of shaving at home, it's just preference. Whatever I pick up, whatever I feel like, just to have some variety as well. So are there advantages to either, or is it just preference of face lathering and bowl lathering? I believe it's preference, guys. I'm going to be honest. It's preference. It's fun. It's great. But it is, kind of whichever way you're feeling that day. You can get a good shave with both. So, face lather, bowl lather, it's preference in my opinion. If you got any other thoughts, please email me at joe.wetshavingnews@gmail.com. And I will definitely put them on the air because I'd like to hear others' thoughts on this actual process. All right, guys. Product review of the week. All right, so recently, I've been looking at these scents. I've been looking for something different. And, I've had this scent in my den for a while, and I just haven't really talked about it. And I just kind of was thinking about it the other day, and I opened it up. And it's called Katie's Bubbles Tonsorial Parlor, right? This actual scent reminds me of being in a barbershop in the 1800s. It's got a light. I got it right here in front of me. And I'm just sniffing. It's got a very sharp citrus scent, which is really big in the 1700s and 1800s, because that's usually what most of the scents were. They were like lemon. They had a lot of lemon zest to it. A lot of fruit. Because that's basically what they were using for all their scents. Caswell Macy number 6 is based on a lemony citrus scent, right? If you've ever had that one before, that's the George Washington scent. It's really good. And this also has a little powdery, either baby powder or talc powder actual undertone on this actual soap by Katie's Bubbles. So this scent really brings me back to where if I'm using some of my really old razors, I have razors from the 1800s and 1700s. This is a type of scent that would fit that razor well, because it actually fits the time era of this actual scent of that razor. And it just smells. I mean, if you're into history and you want to smell something that would have been produced back then, there are a couple soaps out there. This is one of them, definitely. This is one that you'll get that artisan performance with that old-fashioned scent. So that's why I really like it. I mean, Katie's Bubbles, every time I use it, lather is perfect. It's a good soap. It's a good quality soap. But this one really took me back because this one's very sharp. Very sharp citrus with a talc powder clubman type smell on the end, which to me is pretty intense. It's nice. The aftershave is nice too, and it just really wakes you up. I mean, it really makes you feel like a million bucks, and I could see myself going back in time to a time when there was no electricity, or when there was no, when everybody was using straight razors, right, and just shaving out of a bowl with hot water from the stove, right? It's just amazing scent. Chris did a great job with it, so I gotta salute this Katie's Bubbles Tonsorial Baller. If you are looking for an old scent and you're a history buff, get this one. Try this out. You'll be very happy with it. All right, guys, and that really concludes the podcast for this week. A few things going on. I will not be doing a podcast really until May 28th. That will be the next podcast, mainly because I will be out of town. I'm going on a work trip, so I won't be around and will be unable to do a podcast on the road. So I do apologize for that. I'll be missing one show, but we'll definitely get right back to on the regular schedule. We'll be back on May 28th, I believe it is. And looking forward to that as well, guys. And I'm going to miss doing the podcast for, you know, a couple of weeks. But we'll come back just as strong. Hopefully I'll find some good stuff on my trip to talk about. Just want to remind you guys that that the podcast is sponsored by by Sharpologist.com. What your father didn't teach you about shaving. Special thanks to Mark, a.k.a. Mantic59, for letting us use his platform and everything that he does in the wet shaving community. Most of all, I'd like to thank you guys, the viewers and listeners, because without you, there would be no podcast. That's right. Also, take a look at my blog site, ShaveStraightAndSafe.com, for tips and interesting wet shaving stories. And please feel free to contact me at joe.wetshavingnews@gmail.com. Please also subscribe to my YouTube channel with a couple more videos in the works for videos regarding some interesting wet shaving content. Our next show, guys, will be the 28th of May. And until then, shave straight and shave safe. Bye-bye now.